Good morning, and welcome to another in our series of mini shiurim on the book of Ezra. We're learning in the merit of the IDF, Israel's emergency services, the hostages, and the injured. And we are starting Perek Daled. We're starting chapter 4. Up to this point, things have gone fairly well for the Jews. In the first chapter, King Cyrus the Persian, having conquered the Babylonians, licenses and in fact sends the Jews to build the Beis HaMikdash. First I said licenses, he permits them to do it, but it's more than that. He actually sends them back with resources. Some 42,000 and change go back to build the second Beis HaMikdash. And they have the vessels from the first Beis HaMikdash with them. That's chapter 1. Chapter 2, we get a census of those who go back. And yes, there are some people who have problematic lineage, but overall, these are founding families who are going to establish a Jewish world back in Israel in the second Beis HaMikdash period. Then you get to Perek Gimel, chapter 3, and they build a Mizbeach, they build an altar, the first step towards a Beis HaMikdash. They bring Karbanos, this is the month of Tishrei, they celebrate Sukkot, and that brings us to the fourth Perek, and unfortunately, we get into trouble. Here we hit a wall. The wall is Tsarei Yehuda uBinyamin, the enemies of Yehuda and Binyamin. Who are these people and why don't they like us? Why don't we like them? So in order to understand the story, we have to go back to Malachim Aleph chapter 11, the end of the reign of Shlomo HaMelech. Shlomo HaMelech was a wonderful king. He built the first Beis HaMikdash, brilliant beyond all measure, because Hashem has given him this brilliance. What exactly that means, a whole other discussion for some other time. But fundamentally, Shlomo is great until he's not. He has already built the Beis HaMikdash. He gets into trouble, which, if you want to know more about it, take a look at Malachim Aleph, chapter 11. But Hashem sends a Navi, Achia HaShiloni, with a mission of empowering a man by the name of Yeravam ben Nevat. And he says to Yeravam ben Nevat that because of Shlomo's sins, Hashem is going to remove 10 Shvatim, 10 tribes out of the 12, and give them to Yeravam ben Nevat. That becomes the 10 tribes of the north, also known as Malchus Yisrael, the kingdom of Yisrael. In the merit of David, Shlomo's line will retain Yehuda and Binyamin, and that is the kingdom known as Malchus Yehuda or Judea in Yerushalayim and points south. So at that stage, right after the time of Shlomo HaMelech and the time of his son, King Rehavam, there is a split. There is a southern kingdom, Yehuda, Binyamin. There are Kohanim and Leviim. There are some members of the other Shvatim who are around. And then you have north of them, the kingdom of Yisrael. The kingdom of Yehuda goes along with some better kings, some worse kings. Sometimes they're better, sometimes they're not so good. The kingdom of Yisrael, I would say, goes south, but they live in the north, so that's not quite right. But things are not good up north. You end up with some awful kings. You end up with a lot of Avodah Zarah, a lot of idolatry going on. And ultimately, in Malachim Beis, chapter 17, the northern kingdom is invaded by the Assyrians under Shalmaneser. And that is where we are going to pick up in our story, understanding what happens now in the second Beis HaMikdash with Yehuda and Binyamin is going to depend on what happened in Malachim Beis, chapter 17. So let's take a look at Malachim Beis chapter 17. It begins as follows. Bishnas 12 la'achaz melech Yehuda. In the 12th year of Achaz, the king of Judea, Malach Hoshea ben Elah b'Shomron, a fellow by the name of Hoshea ben Elah, becomes king in Shomron. He is king over Yisrael, the northern kingdom, for Teisha Shanim, for 9 years. And he is described as doing that which God very much does not want him to do. He's not as bad as his predecessors in the kings of Yisrael, but he is bad. What happens? Shalmaneser, the Assyrian king, attacks him. He subjugates Hoshea. Hoshea gives him a gift. But the king of Ashur finds that there has been a conspiracy. Hoshea is working on some kind of a rebellion using support from Egypt. And the Assyrians come back. And the Assyrians conquer Shomron, they conquer the northern kingdom, and they exile the Jews who are there. the Chalach, Chavor, and so on. They say they take the Jews of the Northern Kingdom and they send them off into exile. They become known as the Ten Lost Tribes. Not a discussion for right now, but perhaps Yirmiyahu brings them back, perhaps not. That's its own discussion. But the story continues. All this is Malachim Beis, chapter 17. The story continues explaining how the Jews sinned, and therefore Hashem exiled them. They had worshipped Avodah Zarah. They had done terrible things to each other. And so Hashem says, I'm going to exile the Jews. So Hashem says he's going to exile the Jews for their Avodah Zarah. Sorry about that pause. And the Assyrians come in. The Assyrians again exile them. And still in Malachim Beis chapter 17, we find out what happens to the population the Assyrians transfer into where Yisrael had been. The Pasuk says, it's Malachim Beis chapter 17, sentence 25, Vayihi, and it was betchilas shivtam sham, in the beginning of the residency of this new population in Yisrael, lo yara'u es Hashem. They were not God-fearing, right? They came from elsewhere. Vayishalach Hashem bahem es ha'arayos, vayuhargim bahem. Hashem sends lions, and the lions are attacking these new residents of Yisrael. Remember that when the Jews first come into the land, Hashem says, I don't want idolatry in my land. That's what happened to the Canaanim. Now it is happening to the new residents of the land. So they go back to the Assyrian king and they say to him, you know, we don't know anything about the laws of the god of this land. They assume that this has to do with the resident deity being unhappy. And he has sent lions because they don't know what they're supposed to do. We don't know what the method of worship is. So the Assyrian king says, okay, let's get one of these Kohanim from the Jews who I exiled, and he'll teach you how to be Jewish. So one of the Kohanim shows up, and he teaches them how to serve God. And these people who have now been moved into the area, who become known as Shomronim, they become known as Samaritans, they worship their God with their altars, and they also add on the God of the Jews, this local God. That's what they develop there in the land. Very much not what Hashem is looking for. So these are the replacements of the Jews. These are the Samaritans. Parenthetically, interestingly, two things to note. Number one, worth noting that in the Gemara, sometimes we call them Kutim. That's based on their place of origin. In chapter 17, sentence 24, in Malachim Beis, we are told about the population who came in, that they came from a few places. One of them was Kuta, so they become known as Kutim. That's number one. Number two, today the Samaritans claim to be the legitimate biological descendants of Ephraim and Manasseh. They reject this whole story about them having been moved in from elsewhere. In any case, they are worshiping Hashem alongside the worship of this the deities they brought in with them. By the way, this wasn't something that just happened at one point. This is something that happens across two kings, Shalmaneser V and Sargon II, according to the Dat Mikra edition of Malachim Beis. That fits with the text in which the enemies of Yehuda and Binyamin, who we're talking about, are going to refer to multiple Assyrian kings. It's a side note for now. Right now we're still on background. So, there is a debate in Halacha as to the conversion of this new northern population to Judaism. When they learn the ways of God, do they become Jewish or do they not become Jewish? So the Gemara in Kiddushin, Ayin Dalet Amud Aleph, says that these people who came in, who started to serve Hashem, to accept God, attempted a conversion to Judaism. However, they're not considered Jewish. They're converting out of fear of the lions. It is not a real conversion. They're identified as Kuti in the Mishnah in Kiddushin, chapter 4, Mishnah 3. It's Kiddushin 74a, Ayin Dalet Amud Aleph. They are not allowed to marry in because their conversion was not a real conversion. That is discussed further in the Gemara in Kiddushin, Ayin Hey Amud Aleph, Ayin Hey Amud Beis, with a machlokas between Rabbi Yishmael Chazal and Rabbi Akiva about why they are not allowed to marry in, whether they are not allowed to marry in. Rabbi Akiva saying that their conversion is valid. Rabbi Yishmael saying that the conversion is not valid. Rabbi Yishmael said they converted because of fear of the lions. And that's no good. Rabbi Akiva thought no, they were actually real gerim. They were real. They were real converts to Judaism. There was a separate issue regarding whether they would be allowed to marry in or not. So let me make that clear. They're not allowed to marry in. Sorry, let me say it clearly. Kedushin Ayin Dalet Amud Aleph says they are not allowed to marry in. The only question is why. Rabbi Yishmael says it's because their conversion is invalid. Rabbi Akiva has a different reason why their conversion is why they can't marry in. Their conversion actually is valid. It's a separate issue in terms of why they can't marry in. Note, the Rambam does not discuss this population in particular, this population of Kutim, but in Hilchos Yisurei Bia, Yud Gimel, Yud Zayin, the Rambam rules that if somebody converts out of fear of being attacked by lions, the conversion is valid after the fact. It's not really what we would want if somebody comes to convert and we ask them why, and they say it's because I'm worried about being attacked by lions, we generally would not accept them to convert. However, if you didn't know that was why, and they went through the conversion process, the conversion retroactively would be a kosher conversion. So this is the population we are meeting now. People who accepted Judaism in some form, while retaining their idolatry, they now live in the land among the people who are returning, and they are introduced to us as the enemies of Yehuda and Binyamin. Now, Yehuda and Binyamin haven't lived there in 70 years. This population we're talking about, so how could they be the enemies of Yehuda and Binyamin? So either the answer is they're called that because of what they're about to do. They're not really enemies of Yehuda and Binyamin yet, but they will be. Alternatively, we do know there were some Jews who remained in the land even after the Babylonians exiled us. So maybe there was already something going on between these Samaritans and Jews who remained in Yehuda and Binyamin. Maybe they were already the enemies of Yehuda and Binyamin. Could be. Well, what's going to happen is, in the beginning of chapter 4, these people, these enemies of Yehuda and Binyamin, are going to write to the Jews who have returned to the land and say to them, we want to be involved in building the Beis HaMikdash with you. And we'll pick up with that, God willing, tomorrow.